Chapter 13. Business disposed of, Mr. Swiveller was inwardly reminded of its being nigh dinner time, and to the intent that his health might not be endangered by longer abstinence, dispatched a message to the nearest eating house requiring an immediate supply of boiled beef and greens for two. With this demand, however, the eating house, having experience of its customer, declined to comply, churlishly sending back for answer that, if Mr. Swiveller stood in need of beef, perhaps he would be so obliging as to come there and eat it, bringing with him, as grace before meat, the amount of a certain small account which had long been outstanding. Not at all intimidated by this rebuff, but rather sharpened in wits and appetite, Mr. Swiveller forwarded the same message to another and more distant eating house, adding to it by way of writer that the gentleman was induced to send so far, not only by the great fame and popularity its beef had acquired, but in consequence of the extreme toughness of the beef retailed at the obdurate cook's shop, which rendered it quite unfit not merely for gentlemanly food, but for any human consumption. The good effect of this politic course was demonstrated by the speedy arrival of a small pewter pyramid, curiously constructed of platters and covers, whereof the boiled beef plates form the base, and a foaming quart pot the apex. The structure being resolved into its component parts afforded all things requisite and necessary for a hearty meal, to which Mr. Swiveller and his friend applied themselves with great keenness and enjoyment. "May the present moment," apostrophe said Dick, sticking his fork into a large carbuncular potato, "be the worst of our lives. I like the plan of sending them with the peel on. There's a charm in drawing a poto from its native element, if I may so express it, to which the rich and powerful are strangers. Ah! Man wants but little here below, nor wants that little long. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how true that it. After dinner. Apostrophe, I hope the eating housekeeper will want but little, and that he may not want that little long," apostrophe returned his companion. "But I suspect you've no means of paying for this. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I shall be passing present, and I'll call," apostrophe said Dick, winking his eye significantly. "The waiter's quite helpless. The goods are gone, Fred, and there's an end of it." Apostrophe, in point of fact, it would seem that the waiter felt this wholesome truth, for when he returned for the empty plates and dishes, and was informed by Mr. Swiveller with dignified carelessness that he would call and settle when he should be passing presently, he displayed some perturbation of spirit, and muttered a few remarks about payment on delivery and no trust, apostrophe and other unpleasant subjects, but was fain to content himself with inquiring at what hour it was likely that the gentleman would call, in order that being presently responsible for the beef, greens, and sundries, he might take to be in the way at the time. Mr. Swiveller, after mentally calculating his engagements to a nicety, replied that he should look in at from 2 minutes before 6 and 7 minutes past, and the man disappearing with this feeble consolation, Richard Swiveller took a greasy memorandum book from his pocket and made an entry there. "Is that a reminder, in case you should forget to call?" apostrophe apostrophe said Trent with a sneer. "Not exactly, Fred," apostrophe replied the imperturbable Richard, continuing to write with a businesslike air. "I enter in this little book the names of the streets that I can't go down while the shops are open. This dinner today closes Long Acre. I bought a pair of boots in Great Queen Street last week, and made that no thoroughfare to. There's only one avenue to the Strand left often now, and I shall have to stop up that tonight with a pair of gloves. The roads are closing so fast in every direction, that in a month's time, unless my aunt sends me a remittance, I shall have to go 3 or 4 miles out of town to get over the way. Apostrophe, there's no fear of failing in the end?" Apostrophe, apostrophe said Trent. Why, I hope not, apostrophe returned Mr. Swiveller, but the average number of letters it takes to soften her is 6, and this time we have got as far as 8 without any effect at all. I'll write another tomorrow morning. I mean to blot it a good deal, and shake some water over it out of the pepper caster, to make it look penitent. I'm in such a state of mind, that I hardly know what I write blot apostrophe, if you could see me at this minute shedding tears for my past misconduct pepper caster my hand trembles, when I think blot again, if that don't produce the effect, it's all over. Apostrophe, by this time, Mr. Swiveller had finished his entry, and he now replaced his pencil in its little sheath, and closed the book, in a perfectly grave and serious frame of mind. His friend discovered that it was time for him to fulfill some other engagement, and Richard Swiveller was accordingly left alone, in company with the rosy wine, and his own meditations touching Miss Sophie Wackles. It's rather sudden, apostrophe said Dick, shaking his head with a look of infinite wisdom, and running on, as he was accustomed to do, with scraps of verse, as if they were only prose in a hurry. When the heart of a man is depressed with fears, the mist is dispelled when Miss Wackles appears. She's a very nice girl. She's like the red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. There's no denying that she's also like a melody that's sweetly played in tune. It's really very sudden. Not that there's any need, on account of Fred's little sister, to turn cool directly, but it's better not to go too far. If I begin to cool at all, I must begin at once, I see that. There's the chance of an action for breach, that's another. There's the chance of no, there's no chance of that, but it's as well, to be on the safe side. Apostrophe, this undeveloped was the possibility, which Richard Swiveller sought to conceal even from himself, of his not being proof against the charms of Miss Wackles, and in some unguarded moment, by linking his fortunes to hers forever, of putting it out of his own power, to further their notable scheme to which he had so readily become a party. For all these reasons, he decided to pick a quarrel with Miss Wackles without delay, and casting about for a pretext determined in favor of groundless jealousy. Having made up his mind on this important point, he circulated the glass from his right hand to left, and back again, pretty freely, to enable him to act his part with the greater discretion, and then, after making some slight improvements in his toilet, bent his steps towards the spot hallowed by the fair object of his meditations. The spot was at Chesia, for there Miss Sophia Wackles resided with her widowed mother and two sisters, in conjunction with whom she maintained a very small day school for young ladies of proportionate dimensions. A circumstance which was made known to the neighborhood by an oval board over the front first floor windows, whereupon appeared in circumambient flourishes the words Ladies' Seminary, and which was further published and proclaimed at intervals between the hours of 9:30 and 10 in the morning, by a straggling and solitary young lady of tender years standing on the scraper on the tips of her toes, and making futile attempts to reach the knocker with spelling book. The several duties of instruction in this establishment were this discharged: English grammar, composition, geography, and the use of the dumbbells, by Miss Melissa Wackles, writing, arithmetic, dancing, music, and general fascination, by Miss Sophia Wackles, the art of needlework, marking, and samplery, by Miss Jane Wackles, corporal punishment, fasting, and other tortures and terrors, by Mrs. Wackles. Miss Melissa Wackles was the eldest daughter, Miss Sophie the next, and Miss Jane the youngest. Miss Melissa might have seen 35 summers or thereabouts, and verged on the autumnal. Miss Sophie was a fresh, good-humored, buxom girl of 20, and Miss Jane numbered scarcely 16 years. Mrs. Wackles was an excellent, but rather venomous old lady of 80. To this ladies' seminary, then, Richard Swiveller hied, with designs obnoxious to the peace of the fair Sophia, who, arrayed in virgin white, embellished by no ornament, but one blushing rose received him on his arrival, in the midst of very elegant, not to say brilliant, preparations, such as the embellishment of the room with the little flower pots which always stood on the window sill outside, save in windy weather, when they blew into the area, the choice attire of the day scholars who were allowed to grace the festival, the unwonted curls of Miss Jane Wackles who had kept her head during the whole of the preceding day screwed up tight in a yellow playbill, and the solemn gentility and stately bearing of the old lady and her eldest daughter, which struck Mr. Swiveller as being uncommon, but made no further impression upon him. The truth is, and, as there is no accounting for tastes, even a taste so strange as this may be recorded without being looked upon as a willful and malicious invention, the truth is that neither Mrs. Wackles, nor her eldest daughter had at any time greatly favored the pretensions of Mr. Swiveller, being accustomed to make slight mention of him as a gay young man, and to sigh, and shake their heads ominously, whenever his name was mentioned. Mr. Swiveller's conduct in respect to Miss Sophy, having been of that vague and dilatory kind which is usually looked upon as betokening no fixed matrimonial intentions, the young lady herself began in course of time to deem it highly desirable that it should be brought to an issue one way or other. Hence she had at last consented to play off against Richard Swiveller a stricken market gardener known to be ready with his offer on the smallest encouragement, and hence as this occasion had been specially assigned for the purpose, that great anxiety on her part for Richard Swiveller's presence which had occasioned her to leave the note he has been seen to receive. If he has any expectations at all or any means of keeping a wife well, apostrophe said Mrs. Wackles to her eldest daughter, he'll state 'em to us now or never. Apostrophe if he really cares about me, apostrophe thought Miss Sophie, he must tell me so, tonight. Apostrophe, but all these sayings and doings and thinkings being unknown to Mr. Swiveller, affected him not in the least. He was debating in his mind how he could best turn jealous, and wishing that Sophie were for that occasion only far less pretty than she was, or that she were her own sister, which would have served his turn as well, when the company came, and among them the market gardener, whose name was Checks. But Mr. Checks came not alone or unsupported, for he prudently brought along with him his sister, Miss Checks, who making straight to Miss Sophie and taking her by both hands, and kissing her on both cheeks, hoped in an audible whisper that they had not come too early. Too early, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied Miss Sophie. Oh, my dear, apostrophe, rejoined Miss Checks in the same whisper as before, I've been so tormented, so worried, that it's a mercy we were not here at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Alick has been in such a state of impatience to come. You'd hardly believe that he was dressed before dinner time, and has been looking at the clock and teasing me ever since. It's all your fault, you naughty thing. Apostrophe, hereupon Miss Sophie blushed, and Mr. Checks, who was bashful before ladies, blushed too, and Miss Sophie's mother and sisters, to prevent Mr. Checks from blushing more, lavished civilities and attentions upon him, and left Richard Swiveller to take care of himself. Here was the very thing he wanted. Here was good cause, reason, and foundation for pretending to be angry. But having this cause, reason, and foundation which he had come expressly to seek, not expecting to find, Richard Swiveller was angry in sound earnest, and wondered what the devil Checks meant by his impudence. However, Mr. Swiveller had Miss Sophie's hand for the first quadrille, country dances being low, were utterly prescribed, and so gained an advantage over his rival, who sat despondingly in a corner, and contemplated the glorious figure of the young lady as she moved through the mazy dance. Nor was this the only start Mr. Swiveller had of the market gardener, for determining to show the family what quality of man they trifled with, and influenced perhaps by his late libations, He performed such feats of agility, and such spins and twirls as filled the company with astonishment, and in particular caused a very long gentleman who was dancing with a very short scholar, to stand quite transfixed by wonder and admiration. Even Mrs. Wackles forgot for the moment to snub three small young ladies who were inclined to be happy, and could not repress a rising thought that to have such a dancer as that in the family would be a pride indeed. At this momentous crisis, Miss Checks proved herself a vigorous and useful ally, for not confining herself to expressing by scornful smiles a contempt for Mr. Swiveller's accomplishments, she took every opportunity of whispering into Miss Sophie's ear expressions of condolence and sympathy on her being worried by such a ridiculous creature, declaring that she was frightened to death lest a lick should fall upon and beat him in the fullness of his wrath, and entreating Miss Sophie to observe how the eyes of the said lick gleamed with love and fury, passions, it may be observed, which being too much for his eyes rushed into his nose also, and suffused it with a crimson glow. "You must dance with Miss Checks," apostrophe said Miss Sophie to Dick Swiveller, after she had herself danced twice with Mr. Checks, and made great show of encouraging his advances. "She's a nice girl and her brother's quite delightful." Apostrophe, "quite delightful, is he?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, muttered Dick. "Quite delighted to, I should say, from the manner in which he's looking this way." Apostrophe, here Miss Jane, previously instructed for the purpose, interposed her many curls, and whispered her sister, to observe how jealous Mr. Checks was. "Jealous? Like his impudence?" Apostrophe said Richard Swiveller. "His impudence, Mr. Swiveller?" Apostrophe, apostrophe said Miss Jane, tossing her head. "Take care he don't hear you, sir, or you may be sorry for it." Apostrophe, "oh, pray, Jane," apostrophe said Miss Sophie. "Nonsense." Apostrophe, apostrophe replied her sister. "Why shouldn't Mr. Checks be jealous if he likes? I like that, certainly. Mr. Checks has a good a right to be jealous as anyone else has, and perhaps he may have a better right soon, if he hasn't already. You know best about that, Sophie." Apostrophe, though this was a concerted plot between Miss Sophie and her sister, originating in humane opinions, and having for its object the inducing Mr. Swiveller to declare himself in time, it failed in its effect. For Miss Jane, being one of those young ladies who are prematurely shrill and shrewish, gave such undue importance to her part that Mr. Swiveller retired in dudgeon, resigning his mistress to Mr. Checks, and conveying a defiance into his looks which that gentleman indignantly returned. "Did you speak to me, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Checks, following him into a corner. "Have the kindness to smile, sir, in order that we may not be suspected." "Did you speak to me, sir?" Mr. Swiveller looked with a supercilious smile at Mr. Check's toes, then raised his eyes from them to his ankles, from that to his shin, from that to his knee, and so on very gradually, keeping up his right leg, until he reached his waistcoat, when he raised his eyes from button to button until he reached his chin, and traveling straight up the middle of his nose, came at last to his eyes, when he said abruptly, "No, sir, I didn't." Apostrophe, "hem." Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Checks, glancing over his shoulder, "have the goodness to smile again, sir. Perhaps you wished to speak to me, sir." Apostrophe, "no, sir, I didn't do that either." Apostrophe, "perhaps you may have nothing to say to me now, sir," apostrophe said Mr. Checks fiercely. At these words Richard Swiveller withdrew his eyes from Mr. Checks' face, and traveling down the middle of his nose, and down his waistcoat, and down his right leg, reached his toes again, and carefully surveyed him. This done, he crossed over, and coming up the other leg, and thence approaching by the waistcoat as before, said when it got to his eyes, "No, sir, I haven't." Colon, "oh, indeed, sir." Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Checks. I'm glad to hear it. You know where I'm to be found, I suppose, sir, in case you should have anything to say to me? Apostrophe apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.